Hey friends, my name is Christine Chappell, and you're listening to the Hope and Help podcast from the Institute for Biblical Counseling and Discipleship, where we host biblical conversations about life's challenging problems. In this episode, I chat with Brad Hambrick about his new book, Transformative Friendships: 7 Questions to Deepen Any Relationship. For more help on today's topic, visit ibcd.org/hopeandhelp, where you can access notes from today's episode and browse related resources from our digital library. Now, before we get started, let me introduce you to our guest. Brad Hambrick serves as the pastor of counseling at the Summit Church in Durham, North Carolina. He is also assistant professor of biblical counseling at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary and a council member of the Biblical Counseling Coalition. Brad is the author of several books, including Making Sense of Forgiveness, Angry with God, the Church-Based Counseling Series, and he has served as a general editor for the Becoming a Church That Cares Well for the Abused curriculum. Hey there, Brad. Again, welcome to the show. I think this is maybe your third time on. It's like once a year we have you back to talk about a different topic. And it just so happens that this year we are talking about the book Transformative Friendships: 7 Questions to Deepen Any Relationship. And I had the opportunity to preview this book and offer an endorsement, and I recommend it to our listeners today. I wonder if you could tell us why you wanted to write a resource on this topic.
I think there are maybe 2 vantage points I would bring to that question. One logistical, one playful, both true. And so logistically, this is a part of a series of books. The series is entitled Church-Based Counseling. And as churches think about how to create a counseling ministry, the last thing that I would want to see happen is that having a formal counseling ministry devalues the friendships in that church. That, again, I'll overspeak here a little bit, but if we have a counseling ministry and that's where we send all the crying people, and then somehow we undermine the quality of the one another relationships in our church, then having a counseling ministry actually hurt our church. It made it less of what God wanted the church to be. And so in this series, this is the book that says, as you create things that are more formal, don't lose the value of friendship and meaningfully being connected with people, because that's vital to the long-term health. Now, the playful reason is my mother. She always tells me, she's like, all of your books, they are either sad or technical. I want you to write a happy book. And so this is my attempt to make Mama happy and to have a book. Because I'm like, Mama, you know what I do. I'm a counselor. And so we talk about things that are hard and technical. But I hope this is one that has that playful quality to it. Because friendship should be very approachable. And I tried to write it in that way where the reader gets that tone from me on the pages as they seek to engage that with the peers in their life.
That's so awesome. So this one's for you, Mom. I love that.
It
little,
is. Love that, you, Mama.
Yeah, that little note there. That's what a great son. Well, thank you for kind of giving us an introduction into the series, number one, that this book is a part of, and then kind of the tone or the flavor of the resource itself. Now, as I was coming up with the questions for our discussion today, it got me thinking about popular views on what friendship is and how biblical friendship is distinct from those views.
And I think the way I might say it is, Christian friendship just goes a little further. And so standard friendship is, I want my life to be experientially better because you're a part of it. And so if you make my life more enjoyable, then we're friends. And friendship should make our life more enjoyable. We don't want less than that as Christians. But where I think Christian friendship goes further is it's not just that I want my life to be experientially better. I want my life to be qualitatively better. I want my life to be more like Christ, more faith-filled, more hopeful, more purposeful, more directive, because of the way, if we want to use the language of Hebrews, that we spur one another on. Like our relationships are meant to go somewhere. And so, yes, we want to harvest that sense of my life is experientially better, because we're there, and that's definitely in this book. But I also want it to spur us that my life would be qualitatively better because of how we're engaging one another.
I love how you just said that we want this friendship, like we're trying to go somewhere together as friends, like there's a destination. And I don't think I've ever thought of it that way.
I've got lots of acquaintances, and I value those acquaintances, and my life's better because of it. But acquaintances, we share time and space and we enjoy life better. But those that I really like bestow what I consider the higher title of friendship, we're pushing each other somewhere in very welcomed ways. But we're spurring each other on. And I think that's, if we want friendship to be a very valued term, then placing that kind of expectation on it, I think it elevates the value.
Like you said, this book has a maybe perhaps in some regards a lighter tone than a lot of other things that you've ever written in the past. But at the same time, we all know that friendships are hard. It's hard to start them. It's hard to maintain them. It's hard to be vulnerable and invite people in. And so I wonder if maybe you could help us think before we go any further. What are some of the reasons we might struggle to enjoy or pursue meaningful relationships with other people, even in the body of Christ?
Yeah, and this is one where no list is going to be comprehensive. This is kind of a buffet question where different listeners will have to pull like what fits for them and what doesn't. But, you know, one thing is in our day, we just move a lot. Like I think the average adult in the United States right now moves 11 times. And so we're forever feels like we're starting over. And so you start over a few times and you're like, do I really want to invest the time and energy in this if I'm going to move in a little bit? You know, we live in a day and age of a very polished social media presence where everybody takes their best pictures and they put those forward and they filter them in various ways and they annotate them underneath. And we can really present very polished lives. And if we think friendship is just about the most polished part of my life, then that actually, that means friendship is fake. And like, why am I going to invest the work in something that I only show the best and not the hard part? And like, friendship would mean we do all of life together. You know, you've got all the strife in our day where it doesn't seem like there's very many innocent questions left. Like very quickly, there are these hot button on a variety of subjects that you don't know what you're allowed to ask and what you're not. And I think all of these things just add to a sense in which maybe our social skills just aren't as strong as they were a few decades ago, because as we become averse for these kinds of reasons, we just don't exercise our friendship muscles as much as we used to. And so they atrophy. And then you take all of those fears that only seem to be getting larger and muscles that we've atrophied, and it just, yeah, it becomes inhibiting.
Even as I was thinking on that question, I was thinking of the listener who might even have their personal relationships impacted through kind of, you just talked about fears and those fears growing bigger than our muscles, you know, and someone might say, I struggle with social anxiety. So I resonate with exactly what it is you're talking about, Brad. And so this resource doesn't necessarily talk to that, but I wonder even as we're thinking about reasons why we might struggle to enjoy these types of meaningful friendships, well, one of the contexts that struggle may become most apparent is when someone is really wrestling with feelings of anxiety specific to social situations or engaging in meaningful friendships. So do you have some words that you could offer to the listener who might be wrestling with that?
Yeah, I mean, I would be pretty sympathetic to that in terms of casual social environments are not my strong suit. Like just the rhythms of them when a conversation is hopping around, I keep waiting for like, when is it my turn that I get to talk? And those things aren't intuitive to me. And I think sometimes the way that we talk about not just friendship, but a lot of things in church can make that struggle more severe. And what I mean by that is often when we talk about something that is good, like friendship, we will talk about the pristine ideal version, to where if we heard somebody talk about friendship and they talked about what friendships will be like in heaven, and all of a sudden we're going, I don't have any friends like that. I'm not sure I can be a friend like that. Now I feel more lonely and more guilty. Thank you. It's overwhelming. That's much less my approach. Again, we'll get into this in a little bit. We talk about 7 questions. We talk about various level of depth. The mentality I bring to this is just, where are you now? In terms of the friendships you have, what does it look like to really enjoy friendship? And not to feel like it's a greenhouse friendship or a JV friendship, or it's got potential one day it'll grow up into something that's meaningful, whatever meaningful friendship means. But what does it look like to really value and enjoy friendship? One of the last sections of the book is like, use this book to play jazz. This isn't a recipe. It's not notes on a paper where you're doing it like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Like, hear the themes, if you want to make the themes a melody, and give yourself the freedom to play jazz off of that in your relationships. And I think if you have that freedom, it can allow you to let go of some of those inhibitions that make you wonder if you're doing it right.
Yeah, I think that's such a good word, you know, the encouragement to just start where you're at. And that's okay to start where you're at. In that answer that you just gave, you began to introduce this concept of levels and depths and questions and all that. And it's really speaking to the format of the book itself. And so the book is organized by 7 main questions for readers to consider as they engage in transformative friendships. So can you share what those 7 main questions are?
So there's 7 big questions. I don't think there's any magic to those questions. There's nothing where I went into a trance during prayer time and these 7 questions emerged or something like that. But, you know, the questions are, what's your story? What's good? What's hard? What's bad? What's fun? What's stuck? And what's next? And honestly, the seed for that idea came from hearing David Pallison talk about the way that he and his wife, Nan, would debrief their day frequently. They'd get to the end of the day and they just had 3 little questions. What's good? What's hard? What's bad? And that's what they'd use to prompt a conversation when they've been married 40, 50 years. And it's like, what do we talk about now? That just gave them a nice set of questions. But each of those, I think, add a little something unique in value. What's your story? Like, in some ways, how do you know when you're talking to a friend? It's because they know the main characters in your life. Like if I'm telling you a story and I'm like, oh, and this is my brother. Let me tell you a little bit about him so you understand the context for the story. That just means we're not that close. And it's not bad. It just means I'm still catching you up. And so story is not just like salvation testimony. It's just, hey, do you know the major characters in my life? What's good? What are those skills and redemptive qualities and passions and things that like God uniquely laid on your heart and gave you that if I'm going to know you, I want to know what those things are. Those things that are hard. This is probably one of those big distinctions. We could talk about it more, but hard isn't bad. And so often in the Christian life, we treat hard as if it's bad. Well, hard isn't good. It must be bad. No, hard is that category for suffering. And then you got bad. And there's no way we're going to be Christians who talk about friendship. And like, we've got those areas that on this side of the fall and this side of heaven, we've got those things. What's fun? Like that's where most friendships start. What's stuck? Those are the things that used to be fun and went stale. And we often feel really bad about that. Like when something's been meaningful and good and we did it enough that it kind of became a rut in our life and then it loses all the vitality that we used to give it, then sometimes just duty bound, we keep doing it and we're getting a diminished return out of it, but we do it because we'd feel bad if we didn't. Well, what are those things? And then what's next? You know, that's big picture purpose in our life, but then I think we all know people who graduated high school but never got over it. in high school is still like the greatest season of their life, or college, or, you know, gracious, my boys, they're both, one is in college, one is moving towards college. It's like, I missed that season when they were little. And, you know, what's next? Some of it is just the grieving and accepting that next vine of life of where God wants to take us. And if we're going to have friends, they're going to be a part of those major transitions of like what's next in our life. And really all I wanted to do was to give folks some handles, like some simple questions that are short, that you don't have to sound real smart when you say them, but like this would help us talk about the major areas of our life that we would really be doing life together if we had these kind of conversations, and it doesn't seem that complicated.
Thank you for that overview there. Those are really helpful, practical questions that I think all of us can implement in all kinds of relationships. You've got the book structured into those seven major questions, but then you take readers into different depths. So talking about how different friendships have different degrees of depths that they go to. And so I'd love for you to expand on that as well. As we think about how to nourish friendships with wisdom and intention as Christians, you use in the book a tree and root illustration. Can you explain what this illustration is and the idea that it's meant to communicate about friendship depths?
So what we do is we got those seven questions, and each of those I describe at five different depths. And so, you know, roots go deeper. A tree, the longer it's been planted, the deeper its roots go. And that's what we want for our friendships. The longer we know someone, the deeper the roots go. And I just wanted to give a little bit of scaffolding so that that question we talked about earlier, where are you, or where is this friendship, that you can kind of point to on each of the questions, like, we've gone that far, and this is what would be next. Because it, sometimes we do, we get at a loss, like we're hanging out, we're spending time together, and meaningful friendship, meaningful conversation is like a counseling term. It's like processing our emotions. We sound really smart when we say it, but what do we actually mean? And this gives a little bit of a visual where people could point and say, okay, we're there. And this is the next conversation I'd like to have. And so maybe another way, there's the tree metaphor. If I've talked about this with other folks, if you thought about each of the seven questions as spokes on a wheel, like old school bicycle spokes, and you look at your friendships, another kind of assessment to do is to go, which of these seven questions is shallowest in my pool of friendships? Like, is it that several of these, I go decently deep, but there's one or two I've really shied away from. Well, that tells you where you got a flat tire. And I'm enough of a country boy to know that a flat tire doesn't get you anywhere. And when you get to those hard parts of life, whatever those challenges are, it's probably those areas where friendship is flat that are going to be the spot that get you. And so now we can look at it and go, okay, seven questions, this kind of overviews life, different degree of depth. Where am I now? What's next? And then the other thing I try to do is give a summative exercise at the end for each of the questions that just helps you bring that into the rhythms of your friendships. And so, you know, for what's your story? That if we think in the life of our churches, because I think oftentimes what we do in church is we tell people when and where friendship happens much more than we tell them how. And so what if in your small group or on a ministry team that you serve on, you just kept up with the anniversary of when somebody first came or they first started, and you asked them, like, hey, once you've been here for a year, would you mind just sharing us your story? And not just salvation testimony, but kind of give us the long form version of where you grew up and how you got here and where you're going, you know, under the what's bad question, you know, the summative exercise there. And this would, I think it would radically transform our churches if we could get this, is making the not that bad phone call. When you do formal counseling and you sit down with someone and you're getting to know them, and you say, hey, it sounds like this has been a struggle in your life for a while. How come we're working on it now and not earlier? Before it just wasn't that bad. And it doesn't matter what profession you talk to, if it's a mechanic, if it's somebody who does pain management, if it's somebody who does counseling, they all wish their clients would call before it got that bad, because they could do a lot more benefit at a lot less cost and a lot less invasive way if we would just make the "it's not that bad" phone call. And so something's got to put that in the culture of our church that says, like, hey, this is a big deal. The sooner and the earlier that we do it, like, the "not that bad" means I don't have to be at depth 5 for this to make a powerful impact of my life. If I'm having that conversation at depth 2 or 3, when this is a level 2 or 3 struggle, I'm meeting that struggle where it is. And it can make a radical difference before I get to the point of the greater heartaches that would be there. So again, that's some of the aspect behind depths and exercises and things that go with it.
That's a great illustration. It reminded me of a conversation that I had last year as we were preparing for the IBCD Summer Institute and a women's panel discussion on discipleship in the church. And that idea came up in terms of, you know, having meaningful discipleship relationships, or in this context, you know, transformative friendships, can sometimes serve as a preventative medicine, so to speak, in a lot of problems that we experience. And so that's the term that came up to mind as you were explaining that.
100% agree that if so many things that eventually wind up meriting counseling, if we would talk about them sooner, it wouldn't take someone with advanced training. That experience level that we want when we're in a crisis, if we had the courage and the self-awareness to talk sooner, a good friend would be more than enough to walk us through that.
Brad, even though you've obviously written this book to guide readers into meaningful relationships, you also write, quote, "Don't get caught up in wishing each friendship was a little deeper. Enjoy it for where it is." What do you mean by that statement?
Well, a parallel example. When our oldest son was first born, I went to a mentor and I asked him, I was like, "What piece of parenting advice would you give me when I don't have a clue what I'm doing?" And he knew me well enough that he could look at me and say, "Don't get caught looking to the next season of life. Enjoy each season of life for what it has to offer and be fully vested there." And so when they're crawling, don't get looking towards toddler. And when they're toddlers, don't think about what they can do when they run. Don't get caught thinking about what's next so much that it robs you of the joy of where you are. And if this book creates a sense of pressure and pace that I've got to move my friendships as far as I can, as fast as I can, that's actually something that's going to mess up what is trying to be created. Savor each friendship for where it is and what it has to offer. Add a dash of intentionality to it, and it'll grow.
One of the more challenging aspects of friendship is when it exists in the context of suffering. And you address this in the "What's Hard" section of the book. I appreciate how you help us to distinguish, you alluded to it earlier, between hard and bad, because they are not the same thing. And you write that, quote, "Bad means morally wrong. Hard means emotionally, relationally, or logistically difficult." And you keep writing, you say, "Christians often default to interpreting hard as bad because it would be clearer to identify how Jesus is the answer if hard were bad. But the result is that we feel guilty for things that are not wrong, and we ask God to forgive us when he actually wants to comfort us." I thought that was a really profound insight there. So can you expand on this observation and explain how making this distinction can serve our friendships well?
In there, I think I'm really indebted to Michael Emlett at CCF. He wrote a paragraph in his book, Crosstalk, that became the book Sinner, Sufferer, and Saint. And I'm so glad it became its own book, because when it was just a paragraph in Crosstalk, it was hard to point it out to people the way that I wanted to. And then he made it into this book where he's like, hey, as Christians, yes, we're sinners. We're also sufferers. We live in a fallen, broken world. There's things that are hard that are not our fault. And we're saints. And we should be able to minister to people in each of those areas. What I wanted to do with kind of those good, hard, bad questions in this book is take what Mike Emlett did conceptually in his book and operationalize it at the level of friendship. And I talk to so many, and usually it is the most devout of Christians, who when things get hard, like they don't ever want to miss an opportunity to repent. They view repentance as a gift. It is a good thing. It is not punishment. And so to them, repentance is not heavy, but they're going through this really hard time. Diagnosis, their kids struggling in school, a loved one passing away, losing a job, the effects of an economy with all the things that go on there. And they're like, if God is trying to teach me something from this and he needs to correct me, I want to learn it. And they're using the mindset of correction. And again, my faith tradition, I come from a church where if you wanted to compliment the pastor, you came up and you said, "Pastor, if I'd known you were going to preach like that, I'd wear my steel-toed boots. You stepped all over my feet today." And you know, there's that sense of if you gave me something to repent for, you did me a favor. And I don't want to diminish that at all. But if we take that mindset into our suffering, it causes us to hide those things that are hard, both from our friends and from God in prayer, because like, we don't know what to do with it. But when we recognize that there is this category of just hard suffering, and those are times when, as the Beatitudes said, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. That is a primary instinctual response from God to us in our hardship. And I think restoring that allows people to see the tenderness, the compassion, the gentleness of God to meet them where they are and to be that way to one another when things are hard in the life of their friend.
There's a commercial I saw on Facebook. I'll admit I was on Facebook and I watched a Facebook video. Okay. And so, but it was sad though. And I don't remember who put it out but the idea it showed was these two men, I think they were at like soccer games, like professional, some kind of professional sport. And it just showed week after week after week of these two friends going to these games together. And one friend was way totally into this activity and had all the gear on and was hooping and hollering and talking and just having a lot of enthusiasm. And the other friend was basically just silent and looked a little numb. And week after week after week, you see the contrast between they're together at this game. One friend is really involved and for it, and the other friend's just kind of there and not feeling the same level of enthusiasm. And I think they show maybe 10 or 12 different games, you know, scenes they cut to, and you see the same action from both of them until the final scene where now all of a sudden, the only person who shows up is the enthusiastic friend. And the man who was silent and not really involved, the idea is that he took his own life and that could have potentially been intervened had there been some meaningful conversation during this fun activity or this friendship that really relied on, it seems like fun, right? A sporting event. And I say that because in the What's Fun section of this book, you talk about the fact that, you know, we want to pursue what's fun in our friendships, but that if we focus solely on the what's fun aspect, that our friendships could actually stall out. Or in extreme cases like that commercial that I was just talking about, we miss warning signs. We miss connecting with people when we can tell that something is wrong, but we feel awkward maybe about asking what's going on with you. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that dynamic of the fun, but also being intentional in our friendships, and how can we prevent that stall out from happening?
Yeah. And I think that illustration captures well that most friendships start in the soil of what's fun. Like we're doing the things we enjoy, people are around us, we get to know them. And, you know, usually we cover level one and two of most questions just by accident. Just as we're in the same space for an extended period of time. But if all we're doing is what's fun, it becomes a bit repetitious. You know, to use your example of the soccer season, when soccer season is over, we'll see you in 9 months. And again, I got plenty of acquaintances. I love coaching, and our boys would be on the same team, and I would see them you know, for 3 months at a time, about every 6 months, because we played spring and fall. But with a friendship, if we're not asking some of these other questions, then the engagement does become superficial. And we have to find a bigger, more fun thing to do to give us a reason to be together. Because we start to use fun more like a drug. Like you got to have that bigger, better fun to have a reason to get together. Like this local soccer game isn't enough. We got to go to the World Cup. But when you do the, what isn't often that hard of work, to get to know and appreciate the people around you, then you find that the people are the reason that you're there and the activity is the excuse. And when that flips, that's really what tells you that fun is not leading to the stalling out of the friendship. Fun is just establishing a rhythm where we're together and we're going to talk about meaningful things, that's actually what we enjoy. Is the person more than the activity.
I'd like to ask you a question that you even talked a little bit about church context earlier, but what ways that the local church can support and promote the cultivation of transformative friendships?
So when I set out on this project, I went to the pastor over small groups here at our church. And I was like, hey, this is what I'm doing, larger project, helping churches create counseling ministry. I want to do this thing on friendship so that having a counseling ministry doesn't undermine the one another care of the church. Like, if you could give me any guidance, any direction, like from your heart and passion and cultivating small group, one another ministry in the life of our church, what would you tell me? His immediate response: please don't make it a program. Don't make it something that a church would launch. He said, please make it any way you can. Make it about rhythms and habits. He said, because if I've got to launch a program, that's going to take so much energy and attention, and you're forever spinning that flywheel. Got to have a hand on it, keep it moving. He's like, I want something, I need something that just in the rhythms of what we as a church or another church is already doing, that the things that you recommend can fit inside of those pre-existing systems, and it just becomes a habit. It becomes part of the culture. Again, that's where like remembering the anniversary on which somebody joined a small group or a ministry team of another one of those exercises kind of thing is playing good gotcha with people. If I'm talking to good people and I'm being honest, then conversation ought to sound like a compliment a lot. And when you read Paul's letters in the New Testament, he played good gotcha a lot. Like he's forever calling out people by name and these things. And if we had that as a category of what we ought to be doing, and like when we do that, we're taking that question on what's good and we're going deeper. And you know, when we have times when we're a little more sober and we say, hey, probably want to preempt this, but anybody want to share their unpolished testimony? Share your story where you let us see some of the things that are hard. Because there's nothing that promotes vulnerability like vulnerability. There's nothing that promotes honesty like being honest. And if you just inject that rhythm, that culture, that expectation, it very quickly becomes contagious. And people are hungry for it. People are so stinking tired of shallow, superficial relationships that if you just give them the prompt in a space where like, this is what we do. And so I think in some ways I want, in a good sense of the term, this word doesn't get used well as much, but I want this to be the kind of book that you can, that will become contagious in a church. That as we think about friendships that go deeper, it just kind of becomes this germ of an idea and people go, yeah, you give me questions. And these are the kind of things we could do. I like that, that for the most part, it sounds fun. Every once in a while, it's a little more challenging. But even when I see the challenge, it would be good. I'm hungry for that. And it, as long as you keep the awareness there, it doesn't require a program or something that you launch.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. And we have come to the end of our time. So before I ask you the last question, I want to let the listener know that if you are interested in learning more about Brad's book, Transformative Friendship, 7 Questions to Deepen Any Relationship, you can scroll down to the show notes and click the link there, and that will take you to a page on IBCD's website where you can access all of that information. But now, Brad, I'm going to invite you, I think this is the third time now you've done this, to do something that I've asked every guest of the Hope and Help podcast to do, which is to speak directly to the audience. There may be someone listening today who finds themselves struggling to experience meaningful friendships. What would you say to encourage this listener with the hope and help of Jesus Christ?
One, thank you for listening. It is easy when we get discouraged to give up. And the fact that you saw a podcast like this on a topic that was an area of pain for you, and you didn't grow cynical, that says a lot. It says that you're still trying. And I want you to know I really appreciate that. It, as we mentioned a couple of times throughout, try not to get preoccupied with the ideal. We can get so fixated and oftentimes discouraged trying to get to the ideal that we lose the ability to enjoy where we are and those friendships that you have. This is one where we grow in friendship like we grow in the Christian faith. It's progressive. You start where you are, you look at what's next, and I hope this gives you tools. Tools in the sense of simple questions. I could ask that. I could talk about that. Brad told me a little bit of his story in his book. That didn't seem quite as intimidating. And you know, when you hear that from other people, you normally go, I think they feel a little embarrassed. They feel a little self-conscious. I actually admire them. Like I appreciate their courage, their honesty, their vulnerability. And so when you see other people who feel awkward and wanting to be step out and share something and you actually admire them, realize that that's a mirror, that when they see the same from you, that same kind of response is there. And yes, it is genuinely intimidating when we get a little more vulnerable, but it's worth it. And there's a significant reward on the other side.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for those words of encouragement. Again, I appreciate you taking time to talk with me about this book. This episode airs the week that the book releases. And so if you are listening that first week, then go and pre-order the book. If you're listening after March 15th, then go order the copy of the book. But either way, get a copy of this book, put it in your library. It will be a blessing to you. I know it was to me. And so thank you so much, Brad, for joining us for the show today. I really enjoyed hearing from you and look forward to, I guess we'll have to circle back around next year. I don't know what we're going to talk about next year on the podcast, Lord willing, but I'm sure we'll have you back on the future for another great conversation. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Before we let you go, I'd like to remind you to visit ibcd.org/hopeandhelp. There you can check out the show notes from today's episode. If you enjoyed this conversation, why not subscribe to the podcast? That way you'll be notified when new episodes release. Also, please don't keep the Hope and Help podcast a secret. If you know someone who could be encouraged by listening to this episode, please do them a favor by sharing it. Thanks so much for joining us for today's show. Be sure to join us next time on the Hope and Help podcast.